Welcome to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this episode, we're taking our first proper step into the post-Confield world with Autechre's seventh LP, Draft 730 from 2003. Of course, the Gantz Graph EP from 2002 is technically the duo's first post-Confield release, but if Sean Booth is to be believed, Gantz Graph was recorded back in 1999, and anyway, we went in depth on both Confield and Gantz Graph last episode. On that note, this is the first episode where we don't have a companion EP or two to discuss, but we'll make up for that by getting into a ton of your emails. Next up is another listener email episode, so you've still got time to tell us what you think about Draft 730 or anything else. Gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Our next proper episode will be on Untilted, so send us your thoughts on that one as well. Again, that's gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Gotta mention, though, that we're both going to be a bit busier than usual over the holidays, so the plan is to delay everything by 1 week. Sorry, we know that's annoying, but that means the listener email episode will drop 2 weeks from now, and the Untilted episode a week after that. Oh yeah, and we haven't decided what minor release to package into that listener email episode yet, but we will be sure to give you a heads up on Twitter, @GonkcastPod. All right, Dan, what background info do we need to know about Draft 730?
Autechre released Draft 730 on April 7th, 2003. The title's thought to mean the 30th edited version of the duo's seventh album, though some speculate that it's the 30th revision of the seventh draft of the album. but who of course knows. In contrast to Confield, which was controversial for its use of generative sequences created in Max MSP, Draft 730 was sequenced entirely by hand. In a 2004 interview, Sean says that Draft is really straight, using straight up normal sequencers and samplers. It's written note by note, where we know exactly what we put on. Only Rhinophorm Pulse has some generative stuff done by Max, which also controls a vocal filter in that track. Fittingly, the record was seen by many as a return to form after Confield's Digital Extremes, and in a 4-star review, AllMusic calls Draft something less than a radical reinvention, which returns the duo to the more inviting climes of past masterpieces. And adds, the record is immediately more compelling than Confield, with less focus on their trademarked random beat-making software.
It's such a, like, catty review, honestly.
I know.
Like, AllMusic seriously hates Confield for some reason. Others, however, complained that the trailblazing duo was starting to slow down. Pitchfork calls Draft ultimately uninspiring music that, quote, doesn't break much new ground. And a 2003 cover story in The Wire spends a lot of time defending Autechre from accusations of complacency that were apparently common at the time. In regard to fans, Draft seems relatively well-liked. It's got a respectable 3.61 on Rate Your Music, but it's also the first unbolded album in the duo's discography, or at least it was before Rate Your Music started messing with their algorithm. It's so funny because we've been talking, you know, about Rate Your Music this whole time, and it was like Chiastic was the only unbolded one in this period, and then they kind of messed with their algorithm and it became bolded, and now both Chiastic and Incunabula are not bolded. But I think the point still stands. It basically,
yeah,
no matter what tweaks they're making, Draft is the point where, like, the next several albums are no longer drafted or bolded, rather, in the discography. So we're reaching that kind of point. But what is your sense of Draft status nowadays?
Yeah, you know, it does sort of feel like that. I don't want to say cliff or, you know, a drop-off point, but it really is like the one I don't feel like I hear people talking about all that much.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's got something of a reputation for being overlooked, underrated, maybe. I mean, I know it's got its diehards, but it almost feels like the one Autechre album where even, like, really hardcore Autechre fans don't feel embarrassed to say they just don't get it, is my idea. And to kind of transition to my personal history, I mean, this is probably my least listened to Autechre album. I mean, I throw it on when I'm in the mood for this middle period, but I've never really listened close enough to, like, make heads or tails of it. And it's just always kind of been this thing that I just kind of shrug my shoulders when I think about it. What about you?
Kind of similar, you know, it's same way. I never, like, choose to put this one on. It's always, you know, in the context of listening to other records. And really, it's just sort of always been my least favorite. The one I sort of just, I don't know, don't get or you know.
Yeah.
I never really, like, felt the, like, desire to spend a lot of time with it, you know, until the podcast.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think I ever really did. Like, I was fine with it just being the kind of, you know, the undiscovered one, and didn't feel this like, or, you know, with Confield, we talked about how it defeated me over and over again, and I was just dying to get it.
But you tried at least. Yeah.
But this one, it's just like, you know, okay. But, you know, we'll see how, if that changed over these past 2 weeks. I want to ask how you would describe the overall sound of Draft, but maybe we should start with Sean's own description. In the 2013 Ask Autech or Anything, he writes, "Draft feels skeletal to me, kind of hollow but deep as well, like a ruined city in the distant future." I feel like that's a lot more open than they ever are. And we got another great description from listener James, who writes, "This is a free-flowing, heavy beats-orientated, shard synth-stabbing, non-Euclidean space-dripping, claustrophobic, expansive cavern warehouse funktronica."
It's a lot of adjectives.
What do you think about those, and how would you describe the overall sound here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Sean's kind of, I mean, he wrote it, so yeah, obviously, yeah. I think he's kind of on the mark. You know, it is kind of skeletal. I think it's much more like percussion based than previous work, especially Confield. And you know, where Confield was so, you know, like digital was like what was in your face, I feel like it's a complete step in another direction here. Almost all the sounds here sound like real things. There's a lot of like the drum sounds that either sound like, you know, wood gets brought up a lot in reviews and people talking about it. I think there's even some like kits that sound like, you know, real kind of kits. There's just a lot of the percussion like sounds like real percussion, not necessarily played in that way, you know, and then like the way it would be played in the real world. And it's always got some sort of like, you know, effect or you know, it's been tampered with in some way. It's not just like a straight, you know, recording of a you know, regular old drum set that they put in here, you know, don't get me wrong. But it just feels like we've kind of gone back to I don't want to say analog, but we've taken a step towards analog, back from Confield, which was, you know, almost entirely digital.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I do hear obviously a lot of percussion here. Yeah, a lot of mixture, I think, of like these kind of real world sampled sounding sounds. But I just think of like a very dense tangle of percussion, almost. Like
dense is a good word.
It feels like everything feels very like tightly wound, and like, you know, there's a lot of buzzing and glitching on this album, but it's, I don't know, it's so high def that it doesn't feel like, you know, static that is obscuring things in like an EP7 or Chiastic Slide even kind of way. Mm-hmm. It feels just like part of this, I don't know, like this dense texture. I think of, you know, like, I don't know, dense undergrowth or something in a forest. You know, on that note, I kind of want to go out of our usual order and talk about the album art already. It's CGI designed by Alex Rutherford, who directed the Gantz Graph video, also did the Gantz Graph cover art, and would go on to design the Untilted cover art as well. Listener Jordan writes, "I think Dan said he didn't like the cover art, which I don't understand at all because it fits perfectly with the sound. The album has a very liquid futuristic aesthetic, which matches with the gray and white artificial looking stuff. It captures the Y2K aesthetic of the early 2000s, the time of monochrome, sleek and shiny aesthetics and technology." You know, it's an interesting point, but I almost feel like when I look at that, like just kind of twisted computer generated, you know, tangle that's on the cover, it makes me think more of like, yeah, like vines and trees and stuff. A lot of these tracks, they just feel like gnarled tree trunks or something, like covered in, you know, brush and vines that I like can barely see through. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can get that. I mean, it does sort of like look like you know, vines or you know, dense you know, things attached to a tree. I don't love this cover art. I don't remember saying that. I probably did though. I'm always spewing shit. I don't love it. I think it feels like kind of early 2000s. You know, with the CGI. I think I'm more of a Designers Republic kind of guy myself. And I don't know. I did, you know, you sent me like Rutherford's website where he had, you know, some other images and stuff. And I saw the cassette artwork, which I thought was really cool. I really liked it. It's like a It's just like green, but then it's the tape itself is like one of the really, you know, old kind of, you know, 80s, like the one you would like, you know, dub your mixtape on or something. I thought that was really cool. I liked the cassette better.
Yeah. It actually does look really cool. But I mean, would you agree that it's like quite fitting? And when I see that, I mean,
now,
do you agree more with me that it's like some kind of Tangle or more with Jordan, who said, you know, liquid metal or something like that?
Yeah, you know, I think the Tangle is more on it. You know, I think, like you said, the tracks here, the percussion is really dense. You know, there's always like kind of a lot of things going on. I don't think there's like a... I don't know. Yeah, I think the Tangle goes with it much better. And I do think that the cover art represents the sound fairly well here.
Yeah, and it also just feels like very tightly wound. Like things are, you know, sounding like they're going to snap or something. I found myself often thinking of, like, you know, when you're tuning a guitar or something, and mm-hmm. it's, you know, pulled too tight or something, making that...
Like, I can see that, and the artwork almost sort of looks like it snapped, you know? Like,
yeah, it does, yeah. I think that's really accurate. You know, you mentioned this earlier, but I've seen a lot of people describe this album as woody, and I've read, but can't find an actual original source for, claims that Autechre sampled a lot of wood blocks or other, like, random wooden objects on this record, like even just, you know, throwing wood blocks around the room. I don't know if people are just, you know, talking out their ass or what, but... You touched on it a little bit, but what do you make of that introduced into this world here?
Yeah, it's a little strange coming, you know, from Confield, because, I mean, like we talked last episode, you know, Confield was like essentially sounds that you either hadn't heard before or, you know, were clearly like digitally made, you know, that maybe don't exist in the real world. Whereas here, I think there's a lot of sounds that come that are clearly like made from a real thing, you know, and it's not just vocal stuff like is been in the past. You know, there's definitely like some kind of wooden sounds on the opening track, Xylin Room, I guess. In fact, like, I sort of wonder, like, you know, Xylin, is that like xylophone? Because it sort of has like that sort of, you know, xylophone kind of sound to it. I think it also sort of that track, some of the pitches of it sort of sound like you know, what honestly reminded me of it, you know, like the Blue Man Group, how they like make shit out of like PVC something. It's sort of like, I was today when I was listening driving into work, I was sort of laughing to myself thinking of the Blue Man Group, you know, playing that song. So, you know, it really does like sort of have these like naturally occurring kind of sounds in it, which I think we've talked about in the past. You know, like Autechre, recognizable sounds have always been like, oh, you know, I could tell that was from the 808 or, you know, such and such machine, you know. Whereas like here, it's like, I think it's like one of the first times I Reniform Pulse, the last song, the kit, like the drum kit on it, like sort of sometimes sounds like a real drum kit. And I think that one, like, sort of like percussion noise that's constantly happening, like, almost sounds like someone, like, you know, sampled a tabla or something, you know, like like a hand drum, where it's like I don't feel like in any other Autechre record that we've heard like a drum that sounds like an actual, you know, real
physical drum or something. I mean, like, I think on Veep Rock there's like a straight up drum kit, like just complete like real world drum kit. But then and like Xylin Room, there's these kind of like woody sounds. There's like these clangs that sound like real, you know, metal objects in a real room. You know, pops up all the time. Like Surapair has like a similar kind of clank that just feels like real or physical or something. And it makes for an interesting mixture. And I think a mixture that's sort of unique for Autechre, in that I find this room, or I find this album just like intensely digital and glitchy, and yet there's something like grounding it to the real world. I kept thinking for some reason of like Radiohead's King of Limbs, right? And wondering if they were, you know, inspired by this album perhaps in figuring out some way to make electronic sounds sound like deep woods or something. You know, it's so weird on like King of Limbs how it feels very like you're in a forest, dark forest or something, even though like almost everything is electronic and sampled and stuff like that. You know what I mean? It's like this album is overwhelmingly, I mean, these are like light touches of real objects in my opinion, on some songs, not even all of them. But the whole thing ends up having this kind of feeling of like, yeah, electronics that somehow exist in nature or something.
Yeah, it's got like a, you know, almost like an electroacoustic like feel to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think one of the things is like some of those glitch noises, you know, like the glitchy things that happen, like they seem like real sampled, like, you know, either like ground hum or, you know, when you touch a cable to something, you know, or like it sometimes like those glitch sounds like sound like real, you know, like not digitally made glitch sounds or anything. I mean, not always. There's, you know, sometimes... I think it's the third track, 6IECR or whatever, you know, like it when the percussion happened, like everything's always like it's like when I really don't know how to explain like what the effect is. I can't really think of what it's called, but it's like if you take like just a quick sample of it, you know, we used to do, I don't know how to explain it without saying something we did, okay. You know, like we would take like that delay pedal and you could record and we'd just do it for like 1 second, you know, and it kind of make that like kind of noise. Like I feel like the drums in there sort of do that. So it's like a glitch made from, you know, a real drum kind of sound. You know what I mean? It's really, I don't know like what effect that is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of like these really hard cut, like, quick cut sounds and even sounds that do seem to kind of cut off. But I get what you mean by like, we always know that it is like some sort of physical object or real world object, but it does sound like it's glitching somehow, which makes for sort of a disorienting experience, you know, because it's weird when a real object is glitching, you know, like the simulation, you know, there's a glitch in the Matrix or something, but you know, it does just feel like some sort of, these real world objects, in a heavily digital environment or something like that. I mean, it's exactly what I'm looking for in an Autechre record, basically, in the sense that it's like a very distinct world, like a sound world that I've not experienced before, at least on most of these tracks. I'll save, you know, I do have some criticisms for later, but let's stay on the topic of process. Listener AT writes, there's lots of sample drums and sampled sounds on this album, as we were just saying, and a lot of the sampling has that old school sampler feel, like where you set a sample at a bass note, and as you play lower notes, the sound is lower in pitch, but also plays slower. That might be kind of what you were getting at. Listener Darren calls Draft his favorite Autechre album and says, everything sounds deliberately placed, very precise, less algorithmic and more by hand, not to mention the inclusion of realistic room kit sounds in some places, which was a surprise move. So we were kind of getting into that just now, but what effect do you think it has that, do you hear this kind of by hand, like this careful sequencing rather than algorithmic on this?
Yeah, I do. I think, like, you know, sometimes the percussion on here, you know, predictably gets kind of crazy in the Autechre way, but I also... compared to Confield and stuff, I think it's like it makes much more, you know, like, I don't want to say sense because that implies that Confield, you know, rhythmically doesn't make sense. It's just like it's easier to follow. You know, like there's some moments on here that are almost, you know, like danceable. You know, like V-proc and stuff. I think, you know, like you could maybe dance to that. Kind of thing. I think what the listener said too, it does sort of have like a hip hop feel, which of course, you know, we've talked about, you know, all throughout Autechre's career. But I think here, he's right, like with these like sort of samples of real things, and even just the like the beats themselves, you know, it's kind of like hip hop taken to like a I don't want to say advanced level, because you know that's sort of denigrates it, you know, but you know what I mean, like it's like more complicated percussion but with a hip-hop like sort of basis.
Yeah, I mean, AT also argues that the process makes Draft feel like their lo-fi hip-hop album, and then listener Mike wrote, it's obviously hip-hop in style and some of the tracks are straight up hip-hop beats and sounds. For the record, actually, in 2015, Sean said, we thought it was like a hip-hop record or something, but adds, obviously it wasn't. you know, I do hear that kind of energy, that kind of like cut up hip-hop styling, because there are some tracks here that where the beat is, you know, very hip-hop to me, like... Yeah, you mentioned V-Proc, you know, really shines through in that regard. But there's also something about just like the hard cut samples and the collision of samples. And like, you know, it's just I just felt like on Confield, there was such a, you know, we talked a lot about trying to make percussion part of texture or something and using it in an expressive way where it kind of like slowed down and sped up and grew in intensity and then chilled out like in a very like organic, living, breathing way. Everything here feels so like tight, you know, it just feels so, you know, tightly wound, like I was saying earlier, which is weird because if you agree with me that, you know, tracks like Xylon Room sound like a forest or something like that, or like the woods, then why does it simultaneously sound so, you know, stiff almost?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard sort of thing to answer, I think. It's this weird, like, kind of combination of a weird, you know, forest, but also like a, you know, digital, you know, would Sean call it like a ruined city or something? I don't know. It's this weird mixture of the two kind of things. But I definitely feel the forest aspect, I think, a little more.
Yeah, it might be accurate, actually, that idea of a ruined city. It might sound something like some futuristic city that has, you know, been reclaimed by nature or something.
Yeah, like, yeah, that does make sense. Yeah, then yeah, that's a good point. You know, it's got sort of like a half, you know, nature, you know, built over. You know, like when a tree is growing, you know, in a ruined building or something.
Right,
know?
Right, right. Yeah, and that's like that's how you can simultaneously have this kind of like weird strings and, you know, that you see on the cover art, that kind of a audio feeling, while simultaneously having like these really hard cut, like really clean edges on everything all the time. You know, again, makes for sort of a disorienting experience. I think that also adding to the kind of hip hop feel is, you know, maybe like the lack of melody here. So listener Trond wrote us to say, having listened to Draft now to warm up for your show, I was struck by how much of a percussion album it is. There is not much but percussion on it. Even the very minimal and sparse use of melodic elements are often percussive in nature, like the arpeggiated trills on Reniform Pulse and the melodic parts that sound like strings being hit on P and Till. He goes on to call it Autechre's Stomp, which is funny because you just brought up the Blue Man Group, so we got Blue Man Group and Stomp. But do you hear, like, I mean, do you see this as a melodic album at all?
I think the listener email is really spot on there. You know, that there's hints of melody, but he's right. A lot of times it is based in a percussion sort of way. Like the first track, Xylon Room, like I said, it sort of like reminds me of a xylophone, which is a, you know, melodic percussion instrument. And in Reniform Pulse, like I said, that tabula sort of, you know, noise, you know, that's also like a melodic sort of like percussive instrument. I mean, there's certainly some like synths and stuff in there. You get like really, but even then, like on, I think it's a Taper. They're like just real, real stabby, you know, and they just,
yeah, yeah.
It's always like sort of like percussively played, you know, you get a stab of it and then it'll drift away. But that stab is, you know, so like percussive, you know, with a melodic element.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good point actually. Cause on Taper, there are just like these, just, I don't know, gleaming blasts of synth chords, but they are more rhythmic than melodic. It's actually like quite atonal or something, like to try to figure out what these chords are doing. But it does remind me of like if you were just hitting chords like on every, you know, on the one every time or something. It was just sort of adding that like big, even though it's obviously not happening on the one, it's happening all over the place. But yeah, there are other times like on you know, on Xylon, there's like that really buzzy synth melody that's quite bright and like weirdly happy to my ears, but it feels more percussive than melodic somehow. It's just like kind of this grinding that's like adding a lot to the beat. Or on PN Till, like toward the end, there are these like, you know, tinkling like piano type sounds that sort of come in toward the end there. And they bring a lot of melody to the track, but they feel like just much more percussive than anything else, you know? So I feel like there's almost no melody here that is not primarily adding to the beat. It almost feels like every track is like a meditation on the beat. And a lot of tracks end up just, you know, becoming beats. You know what I mean? Like the melody sort of disappears. I think of like, you know, 6-1-E-C-R. You know, there's like a stretch there where it's just the beat. You know, like you started with actually like a pretty, I don't know, quite a pretty melody in the high lead sounds. but then you end up with just a beat, but it's like the beat is, you know, it's like toms, how they're tuned to notes, right? And so it's giving you some melody to latch onto, even though it's purely a rhythmic workout.
Yeah, definitely. It just feels like the whole record is completely based around, you know, like percussion is first, you know, beat is first, which, you know, is such a hip hop, you know, move.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Sticking with process, Trond wonders if they explored physical modeling synthesis for the sound of this album, which refers to the to sound synthesis methods in which the waveform of the sound to be generated is computed using a mathematical model, a set of equations, and algorithms to simulate a physical source of sound, usually a musical instrument, according to Wikipedia. Do you think there's any chance that, like, the sounds that we think are real objects are actually just, you know, created digitally?
I mean, I think there's always a chance. I mean, especially with people like Ottekker that are like so, you know, good at this sound, you know, making, you know, the sound design and everything. So definitely there's a chance. But to be honest, I don't know very much about, you know, physical modeling synthesis or anything. So I could be wrong, but it really feels like, actually sampled, you know. And Sean said in that interview, again, if you believe, you know, he's sort of the unreliable narrator sometimes, but, you know, he even said, you know, they used real samplers and stuff. So I kind of think not.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm willing to believe that probably there are some sounds that are like real as hell. There are sounds that are somewhere in between, whether it's like you were saying earlier, that it's like a real sound that's been glitched into something bizarre, or it was a totally digital sound made to resemble something real. And then on the other side, there's, you know, purely digital sounds that just scream digital, and that's all you can think of them as. And it makes just, again, this like really distinct combination. You know, on that note, I wonder, how do you think Draft relates to Confield and Gantz Graf, for that matter? You know, we had listener Jordan say that he sees Confield, Draft, and Untilted as a trilogy. And listener Ellen wrote us about Confield's new use of digitally found sounds, calling Draft very much part two of this phase in their development. Do you see Draft and Confield as like that close? I know a lot of people kind of dismiss Draft for being like a rehash of Confield. Is that how you hear it?
Not really. I think of Draft as sort of like a step back from Confield. You know, Confield was just like completely, you know, making this whole new thing, you know, like going in such a crazy direction. And I think that's why contemporary like reviews and everything, you know, it wasn't like the best received record. And it almost sort of worries me that like that negative response or whatever, like made them, you know, kind of take a step backwards in development and, you know, bring Draft. I don't want to sound like I hate Draft or anything, but it just really sounds like, it almost sounds like to me like Incunabula through like the view of like somebody who made Confield, you know, like if Incunabula didn't come first, kind of thing, like in the sense that, you know, it's danceable. I think even, you know, I brought up like V-Proc. Also, I mean, 6IECR is like pretty kind of danceable
funky
at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. And stuff. I don't know. It just seems like it's gone back to, and I hate to use this word, but like, you know, more normal music here on Draft.
Yeah, I guess it's an interesting theory, and I could sort of imagine it. To me, it feels like, I don't know, quite different from Confield. I can understand why like some outside listener would hear them as like pretty much the same, but you know, when you're real deep into it, it's like if the central thing about Confield was like this clean, like, I don't know, laser precision, but then with like all sorts of like movement and fluidity and just like living, breathing feeling in it. You know, this is so different, I think, because like, I don't know, Confield is pretty, I don't know, it's pretty wide open. It's pretty sparse to me. You know, there are a couple tracks in the middle there that get like a little dense and they're almost just like noise type compositions or like sound collages or something. But for the most part, I mean, everything's really clean. I feel like you can hear everything. This is just so dense. Like, you know, I never know what I'm looking at, really. And like, it's interesting. We haven't talked much about sort of the structure of these tracks, I guess I don't know. What I feel sort of like saying is that half of the tracks here follow this formula of it starts off in some sort of like understandable way and then just gets deconstructed over the course of it. Like, you know, Xylin mm-hmm. just kind of like you start to get these like longer than is comfortable pauses in between like the repetition of the pattern. You know, it's almost like a sort of like aborted fill or something. And then it just starts to get so much harder to like grab onto anything or know what's going on. You know, I think 6-1-E kind of does that as well. You know, IV, VV, IV, VV, VIII. That's the only time, that's the only time I'll say the whole name. That track just almost starts off deconstructed and then gets more deconstructed. On the other hand, there are tracks that start off totally deconstructed and then build into something recognizable. I feel like particularly on the second half, like Theme of Sudden Roundabout, I think VL kind of does that. So it's kind of like, I don't know, just like a wildly different structural approach and sound approach from Confield.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And the other thing, like we talked about, like Confield does not really seem human, you know, like it doesn't feel like, and I think that's why like people had such a problem with it and like why it gets this like bad label with like the generative, you know, algorithmic feel and everything. It like, it really does sort of feel like software. Whereas I think here on Draft 730, like, That's this feels like it's made by a person, you know, like even like you said, like the songs become like deconstructed and stuff or do the opposite, you know, that there's always like some sort of, you know, construction there. You know, like very often, like you can easily like find the beat or the groove to it, you know, whereas like on Confield, you know, some of those rhythms and stuff are just such like crazy time signatures and you know, repeated and stuff like that. It's just, you know, mind blow, you know, you can't like really grasp your, you know, can't get your head around it super easily. And I think like that is, very much gone here on Draft.
Yeah. I feel like you never forget that somebody's doing the deconstructing or the reconstructing.
Exactly.
And that kind of goes back to that, like sequencing by hand. I mean, what do you make of like tracks like Surrepair that kind of goes on a journey? You know, I'm tempted to call it like jammy in a way, but do you think it sounds, you know, like jammy or alive in a Confield or even like, you know, Chiastic Slide way? Or do you think it feels, you know, super meticulous? And how does that, you know, affect the way you think of kind of like a proggy jam like Surrepair?
Yeah, Surrepair is like sort of the a little bit of the outlier here, because you're right. I think it does like sort of have a kind of a jammy feel to it. But just because something's jammy doesn't mean that it's not, you know, done by hand kind of thing. I think that's the claim, you know, for this record. It does sort of feel like somebody is the one twisting those knobs, you know, or, you know, moving those sliders, you know, whatever metaphor you want to use. Whereas like oftentimes Confield, like it felt like, you know, generative, like the computer is, you know, using parameters and rules set by, you know, a human, but then it's acting on those on their own. Like it feels like things on Draft, like Surrepair stuff, like it's following like, you know, a person doing these things, and you know, they're not like hard set algorithmic rules.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like they set up parameters on Confield that made a piece that feels alive. And here, it's almost the opposite in that it feels so overworked. You know, not necessarily criticism, but just like that's kind of the sound of this thing is it's so tightly wound. It's so densely packed. It's so tangled and gnarled. You know, it's like somebody has, I don't know, just tinkered with it until it's like just tangled mess.
Yeah, I mean, if you believe the, you know, the thing about the title being the 30th revision, you know, of the seventh record,
right.
I mean, it feels like, you know, something that's been worked on, you know, 30 revisions, you know?
Yeah, I feel like they almost want you to think of it that way. I want to return to what you said a minute ago, though, about like being something like a step back. You know, all music, they compare it to past masterpieces, and they mentioned Tri Repete in particular. We had listener Eric, who shared a review with us that he wrote for his blog, which is pretty cool. You should check it out, lonelymachines.org. He's like sort of done these great long track-by-track write-ups on a number of Autechre releases. But he says, at first, it seems like a step backwards toward the cleaner and more playful feel of LP5. With some time, though, he says it sounds like a mixture of elements from both LP5 and Confield, even if what they've done with it is different. So when you say a step back, I mean, do you mean like, you mentioned Incunabula, but do you mean like all the way back to Tri Rep? Do you mean like kind of the more accessible style of LP5 or what?
Yeah, I think I mean the more accessible like style of LP5. I think actually, you know, what he said there in his review kind of works. Like, there is like a mixture of elements from LP5 and Confield. Like the what we're getting from Confield is this sort of like digital thing, but I think they're using like the cleanness and accessibility and again, I hate using like the word normal, but like the normalness of like LP5, but with this, you know, it's a, like I said, it's like if Incunabula was made after Confield, you know, it's clear like from the group that made Confield, but they're using like the digitalness and stuff like in such a different way. And it just feels like a step back for me because it is so kind of like close to the sounds of LP5 or even Tri Rep or anything. Like, I feel like every other Autechre record we've talked about so far, you know, it's always like they're moving in such a, you know, in one direction, and nothing really sounds like the last record. You know, I mean, maybe you can you know, tell tricks they picked up or learned or something, but it's always like, I feel like through a completely different lens. Here, I don't feel like the lens is completely new. It's maybe like a mix of the lenses or something, but I don't know. It just really is the first time I feel like I'm not in a completely different world, you know?
Yeah, honestly, now that I'm thinking about, you know, what Eric said there, I'm tempted to say that this sounds like the 30th edited version of LP5. Like, if they overworked it 30 times, just making it more abstract and more dense and like more twisted and tangled, it would probably kind of sound like this, because it does have that kind of that really clean, like high def sound of LP5. And you know, there are some tracks that just kind of jump right out with very accessible beats and, you know, often get more twisted as time goes on, deconstructed, or the other way around, you know. But it just feels like these started in an accessible space somewhere, like a clean, accessible space, and then just got more and more, you know, messed with. I also feel like EP7 is like a huge influence on this record. It's like a almost like a higher def EP7, because like I said, the sort of static and the glitching there is on EP7 is used for, like, you know, to kind of obscure things, to just make things dirtier and grittier. And here it remains clean, but there's just so much of this like buzzing and glitching and everything. You know, I feel like VLAL5, it's like a redo of Zeiss Contra-X. It really sounds like the same sort of beat with this like static buzzing, this, you know, these sort of subterranean bass notes and like a kind of clicky beat. You know, and it even has this kind of static that gets increasingly rhythmic as the track goes on. It's the same trick from Zeiss Contra-X. You even get some like radio interference type sounds that start adding into the rhythms and everything. It all kind of comes together and takes shape. I don't know. I was just sort of like disappointed when I realized that they were, you know, retreading the same ground there.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't make that connection until right now when you said it, but I think you're right. You know, it really does like sort of sound like the tricks of EP7. And I just don't feel like, I can't remember a time we've mentioned, you know, in this podcast so far, like we've never used the word retreading or anything, you know, like it just always feels like we're in, you know, like almost every, you know, Autechre record we've released or we've talked about so far, it's like if you told me this was a different group between each one, if I didn't know any better, I think I would believe you. And not to say that this one is like, you know, Tri Repete Part 2 or LP5 Part 2 or anything. It's just the first time Like, honestly, if this was any other group, I don't think I would be complaining. You know, I don't think it's like that much of a retread. But for a group that's, you know, I've said it, you know, my favorite thing about Ottekker is like how you never know what you're going to get. You know, it's just always like something brand new. You know, it's like one of the only groups I've ever listened to where not only will I hear like, you know, music that I've never heard before, but I like literally sounds I've never, you know, heard before. Right. And not to say that like nothing like that happens on this record. It's just I have that feeling the least amount far listening to Draft.
I feel like the sound design, like I was saying, it's like a distinct and like very new world, like this combination of real sounds, totally digital sounds, sounds that are in between those two kind of things. You know, it's striking at first, but it's almost like it wears off a little bit because, you know, I'm disappointed by VL-AL5, frankly, and that it does feel so similar. Also, like totally bizarre on the track how you get these big, clean strings like straight out of Amber that just pop in to say hello every once in a while. It is like striking to me. And then Theme of Sudden Roundabout is like it's just a like rework of Seafern, it sounds to me. Like it sort of starts off in like really abstract territory. It almost feels like Taper in the beginning. I tested like what if you listen to Taper right into Theme of Sudden Roundabout. It doesn't really work, maybe just because I've listened to it in the right order a million times, but you know, it sounds like it just starts off as Taper and turns into Seafern, except for it's like a more claustrophobic and more like sequence by hand sounding Seafern, which is just sort of disappointing. I don't know. I want to read sort of a curious comment from listener Tron, who complains that Confield sounds too thin for his taste and writes, on Draft, they switch mastering duties to Noel Somerville, and that album is just a much more pleasing listening experience, candy for my ears. In the Ask Ottekker Anything, Rob notes that Noel's mastering was spot on, given the Draft was heavy on the really quick transients, wooden mids, tight and rubbery bass, hard to commit to vinyl and get it loud without being limited to mush and keep all the air in the tracks. I mean, I'm probably not, you know, educated enough to tell the difference between, you know, the mastering and the mixing and, you know, whatever, but, you know, does it just like as an overall sound that much different from Confield to you?
I same as you. I don't know enough about it. I've seen a lot of people describe this as a real, you know, kind of headphone record. And I can agree with that. You know, I mean, it definitely sounds great. You know, I think from what I do understand of mixing and mastering, I think it is done very well. But I didn't really have any issues with Confield either. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I thought that like, you know, the mastering or the mixing or whatever just really complemented Confield sound. This like very clean, like wide open sound for the most part. And I agree that here it's got like just bigger, deeper, you know, bass. And you know, even when bass sounds are kind of like hollow or something, they feel big. You know, there's just a lot of this like big booming size. I mean, I think part of that, you know, makes this record sort of accessible in a weird way that Confield is not. Let me return to listener Ellen, again, trying to pack a lot of emails into this episode, who wrote us this great email about her background in dance and how that influences her approach to Ottekker. We talked about it a little more depth on our last listener email episode, but she writes, looking forward to Draft 730, which I think is very much part two of this phase in their development, even when they create something as danceable and it really does rock as 61ECR. That wonderful mutation of texture is still present. Again, people should perhaps try approaching Ottekker from the dance perspective. I worked with a friend's dance group to choreograph a routine for 61ECR, and in doing so, you really begin to understand what is happening. Even today, when I listen to them, I think of movement and how my body can interpret what is happening. I am somewhat more limited by age than I was, but my mind can still see the movement. I liked Confield and Draft from the outset. I stopped viewing Ottekker as merely an intelligent dance band and started to see them as artists that could take dance into new forms. Try going to some modern dance performances once this awful COVID thing is done with. They will often use music that is very Ottekker-esque, and I believe Booth and Brown started it. In fact, I know they did. So this kind of raises the question, how difficult is Draft, you know, period, and compared to Confield? Are the beats as hard to understand as they were there initially? Should we try dancing to Draft?
Oh, well, I'll let you do that. I'm not much of a dancer myself, but I don't think that they're as difficult as Confield. I mean, I think the tracks she brought up, 6IE, you know, CR, you know, VPROC, you know, I've said already, are fairly danceable. You know, they, I don't know if they are 4/4, but they, you know, they sort of like have that, you know, kind of easy to find, you know, rhythm in them. Whereas I feel like Confield, oftentimes, you know, the rhythm felt random. You know, we answered the other part of her email in our last listener thing, and she set us straight, you know, rightfully. You know, I think we got a little too into the randomness of it, and I know that it's not actually, you know, random, that it's just like such a long repeating, you know, bar or whatever, that it can feel that way, which, yeah, I think is probably very difficult to dance to.
But you can always find like the pulse, I think, on Confield. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's there, it's discoverable, it just takes a little bit of work. Here, you know, I think the pulse is like immediately present, even on the most abstract tracks. You know, there's some tracks where you lose it, you know, it sort of like becomes like just totally deconstructed and fragmented. Yeah. And that seems to be sort of the point of those tracks, and others, again, where it starts that way and ends in a more understandable way. But my thinking is that Draft is more accessible. Like, it lets you in the front door easier, but it's hard to get farther than that. You know what I mean? Like, because we've said it before, we've joked about it, but like, normies love beats. You know what I mean? And you put this on and you're like, damn, these are great beats. You know, I love this. And then I feel like it was so difficult for me to take that second step, you know, a little deeper. Like, I was just, you know, I was just like, oh, wow, this is grooving. This is funky. This is hip hop. You know, I'm right in here. I'm like loving, you know, just being bewildered by this dense tangle of percussion and half melody, half percussion that I'm hearing. But did you kind of feel the same way? It was like harder to get any further than that, just kind of like initial accessibility.
Yeah. It's hard to like, it's just, I hate to keep using the word, but it's just like sometimes like too normal. And it was hard to like find the, you know, what is strange about it or whatever.
Yeah, I want to read a couple of other emails. One from listener Jeff, who says, "For almost a decade, I always saw Draft as totally inaccessible, but as is a common Autechre effect, where previously disliked releases click over time. When I was re-examining their catalog before XI, I found myself really digging it." You know, we also had listener Sean say, I'm assuming not the Sean of Autechre, say, "I've been doing the discography with you guys, and Draft has been the hardest for me to get into thus far. After many listens, I was still struggling. Then I read a review somewhere that said Rob or Sean said that you really shouldn't listen to Draft on MP3s. I realized I hadn't even listened to it on proper speakers yet, and now playing the AIFFs loud on my monitors, I'm appreciating it much more. This is music that has to be experienced in a physical space with great audio, in my opinion. It's still dark, tough music to get through at times, lots of dissonance and squelches, but giving the listening experience what it deserves instead of Apple earbuds on my walks to the park allows me, for example, in Theme of Sudden Roundabout, to actually feel the beat instead of just concentrating on the dissonance of the synths. The clarity of the layers and the high end of VLAI-5 are really amazing to hear on a nice system and is now one of my favorites. But yeah, there are some super grating frequencies on here, and I think I got sidetracked by them. Reniform pulse bangs no matter what system it's played on." You know, I think this raises some interesting points, because my experience when I listen to every record for this show is like, I just kind of have it on, you know, in the background while I'm doing stuff, like all the time. And I start to kind of zero in on things that, you know, strike me as interesting. And then I start to like get into the album. And then it's like, usually I wait a few days to give it like the real headphone listen, you know, and then I'm like, oh yeah, that's what was going on. I felt this time like I enjoyed it much more in the sort of passive, like I'm playing it loud on my speakers. Even if I'm focusing on it, it's filling a physical space. The beat is kind of like, you know, I can feel it in my gut, you know. And then I liked it a lot less when I gave it the headphone listen and focused real closely on what was going on.
You know, I sort of felt the same way. You know, it really was sort of a, like I listen, you know, all day, like while I'm at work, you know, on a, not the greatest speaker in the world, but you know, a decent enough, you know, little Bluetooth, you know, kind of speaker. And yeah, it was sort of like the most pleasant in that aspect, because then, you know, once I was sitting and listening in headphones, like, I don't know, I felt it like, I found it, frankly, a little annoying to listen to while I was, like, reading, you know, like, with it being in headphones.
Yeah.
And I also listened to it, you know, while just like hanging out reading through the speaker. And again, like it sort of like was able to drift into the background a little bit or whatever and wasn't so annoying-ish. So I mean, I definitely, you know, understand that.
Yeah, it might be that it's like a true kind of dance album, like Ellen was saying, and that you're supposed to feel this more than think about it, which also makes it like, in my opinion, the polar opposite of Confield.
Yeah.
You know, because I was just like, I loved the grooves. I loved like the crazy interplay of rhythms. And then when I, you know, a lot of the tracks I zoned in, I mentioned like just sort of realizing I was disappointed by VL AL5 and, you know, disappointed by Theme of Sudden Roundabout because they sounded like other Autechre tracks and, you know, stuff like V-Proc, like it bangs like for sure. It's like absolutely funky as hell. And this real kit just comes crashing in. It is like the funkiest thing. I'm like, what the fuck? And, you know, it was like kind of mind boggling the first couple times. And then once I like just sat down and listened to it, I was like, it sort of sounds like, you know, if there must be like a YouTube channel or something where like some kid drums to crazy electronic tracks, you know, and like makes a little remix of them, like adding a real kit to Aphex Twin or something like that. You know, it felt like a little novelty-ish to me. I feel like this is overly harsh, but that close listening revealed just like the little like tricks or repetitions or whatever.
I think, you know, that does sound maybe a little overly harsh, but I had like a very similar feeling with it. I've talked about in the podcast, you know, I always sort of, you know, we try to rank them, and I always like, almost every time I have like this realization, I'm like, oh God, is this the best Autechre record? You know, like just from sheer, you know, listening and like, you know, once you really zero in on things like, you know, there's always stuff to find. And this was the first record I felt like I did not ever think, is this the best Autechre record? And like the zeroing in was making it, you know, almost worse kind of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just that, like, I don't know, tracks seem to kind of go nowhere. Like, at first I was really impressed by Xylon Room and how, like, I could feel it in my bones. And then I start to, like, lose track of it. And they're like, these kind of high, like, atonal keyboard melodies. And they're just, like, floating, you know, like, hanging in air, like, motionless or something, while this thing, like, totally falls apart. And it just created this really cool disorienting effect. But then, I don't know, when you listen to it, you just kind of realize, like, you know, it just sort of falls apart. Like, there's not much more to it than that. And there are like many tracks like that where it's like, you know, what can you say other than it falls apart or it builds up, you know? I don't know. I also want to ask about the track titles. I feel like this added maybe to the strengths, but also to the weaknesses of this album, in the sense that, like, I don't know, this is the first time that I've really struggled and actually continue to struggle, like, to remember which track is which, because the track titles are so just, they give you nothing. They're just like random letters and stuff. And, you know, and it added to just kind of the overwhelming feeling of this whole record. Like, I'm feeling like I'm lost in some dark woods or something. I don't know where I am or what I'm even looking at. And that was kind of cool. But then it was just like, if the track was named something like easier, maybe I wouldn't have had that like same feeling lost for so long. There's kind of an interesting anecdote that there are original titles for these songs floating around. I won't read all of them, but highlights include Prince Moth, Mothy Moth Moth, and Kidney Bean. These are actually confirmed by Sean, who said, I threw them on the CD database before the release for a laugh to see if anyone would notice. I wonder what you make of the track titles, the album title here, any grand theories?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Like, this is like the first time, you know, it's the, you know, old, you know, joke about Autechre and the track titles. But I think that this is the first time we really get into where, I mean, you know, what the hell is track two, you know, 4554 right. 55, you know, 8 or whatever. Like, what does that mean? You know, the only ones that the, you know, Theme of Sudden Roundabout, like even, you know, though we're using real words there, it kind of gives you nothing. And I think you're right, you know, that does like sort of lead to the you know, lost in the woods kind of feel to it. You know, it's like you don't know which way is up or down or anything.
Right. I almost feel like that's what they were going for. Like, that's maybe why they decided to change the titles or whatever. It's like, you know, and this becomes almost their trademark, but I still feel like, I don't know, the track names are I don't know, after this, they're still more distinct or something. Maybe because the tracks are more distinct themselves, and you just kind of like associate it with the letters and numbers and crazy words and stuff. But here it just added to this like weird anonymity of the whole thing. And I started thinking about the album title and developing, sort of a Gabe overthinks it, except I think it's so obvious. But it's like the fact that it's called Draft 730, just really calls attention to, the process of making. It's like calling your album or something like that. And it seems to call attention to the fact that, these tracks could have sounded different, right? Like they used to sound different 30 iterations ago. They would continue to sound different if we kept working on it. It's like a lot of the tracks just cut off, like just mid thought. And it almost just, again, calls attention to the idea that like, this continued, you're just not hearing it, like this is just, we could have picked a different part of the track, and everything about it just seems to, even the idea of like redoing a couple earlier track ideas here just seems to call attention to the idea that this is like a work in progress. I almost started to think like, is this an album about writer's block? Like not knowing what step to take next? Like that's why you hear little pieces from previous albums and stuff and just weird collisions of different styles and like just randomly we're in like electro funk banger after like the most deconstructed abstract track. It's just, it's like a mess. And they were like, I'll just title it, Mess 730.
I think that's a good point. The, when you call it, draft, I think that like leads to, draft 730, if that's is what it means. Like it's like you're getting like, this is a one screenshot of it, like this is what it looked like, draft 7.30, version 7.30, which implies that like, these are like unfinished in the sense that like maybe they're never finished. I've always heard, people who are like professional musicians and stuff like that, it is like sort of hard to know like when do you stop working on something,
right,
And I can see that being like especially hard for something like Autechre, where you're literally like building a, how do you say that's it, it doesn't need any more, there's no more effect that could do anything, so like I could see that. And I think that what you said, a lot of the songs like do just sort of like end. I think like often they even kind of begin that way, like Reniform Pulse. Yeah. Like it just sort of kind of it fades in like such a long amount. It's almost like we're missing part of it. Even the first track, like Xylon Room, like why does it start with like 14 seconds of silence, at the beginning, kind of thing. I think that's really apt. And I think that your writer's block, overthinks it is a better overthinks it than normal. I said it earlier in the episode, but like this record almost like Autechre always seems like some like people who don't really care what people think about the, they're making music that they want to make, that they want to hear. And it just like worries me that like maybe the criticisms of Confield like did kind of get to them. And
yeah, it's possible. And I just feel like they are perfectionists by nature. It's what I love about them. And you mentioned not knowing when you're done, but I rest easy knowing that when I hear an Autechre album, like it's done, like this is what they wanted, what they wanted to put out in the world. And just calling it Draft 730 and kind of this like weird disjointed, just hard cut off kind of thing. And like really kind of random track sequencing, in my opinion, an assortment of bangers toward the end and like random banger in the middle of the most abstract section of the record with 6-1-E, it just feels like they just gave up. They were like, we can't work on this anymore. Here it is. I don't know if it's that they were, maybe they were disheartened by the initial response to Confield. And of course it's kind of widely recognized as a masterpiece now, which is funny, but I don't know. This feels like, it really feels like an unfinished thing. And they just were like, well, make sure everybody knows it's unfinished in the title and, sick of working on it.
Yeah. I mean, I hope that's not the case because you're right. I, I, I do appreciate like the perfectionism of Odd Tucker and all, but it really does like sort of feel like here is the first time that we've not gotten that. I mean, even you know, we talked about with Incunabula, you know, they said that that was sort of like, they kind of think of it as a compilation and, you know, but even that, it just, it feels like a record, we talked about it on that episode. Like it's hard to believe that statement because it like so much doesn't really feel like that.
Yeah. Or like EP7 that they like, mm-hmm. were kind of saying like they were frustrated with having to make a perfect album every time and they just wanted to put something out there, but they couldn't resist making a perfect album.
Exactly.
Okay, so people are going to think we absolutely hate this, but there are some high highs for sure. On that note, let's talk about what your favorite tracks are, but let me quiz you as I usually do. What do you think is the highest rated track here?
I think it's 6IECR.
Really? Well, yeah. It's Syrup Air is the highest rating.
All right. That would have been my second guess.
You know, considered a big standout here. But yeah, 6IE is bolded. P and Till is bolded. V Proc is bolded. And Reniform Pulse is bolded. I think this is bullshit because these are the five tracks that start off in an accessible space. Like some of them get totally deconstructed and stuff like that. Some of them get super deconstructed. But these are all five tracks that are just like immediately accessible and gripping. And I just feel like, I don't know, people got lazy trying to rate these tracks. They were just like, oh yeah, that's the most fun. You know what I mean? Like, but what are your favorite tracks here?
Yeah. I mean, I think I fall for that a little bit. I like 6IE a lot, you know, it is like kind of the most fun you've had with Odd Tucker in a while. I think I really do like Syrup Air. You know, that the jamminess, like I think that is maybe the best track on here and the track that doesn't fall in the traps of draft quite as much. You know, with it being so long and everything, it's the one that I think has the most like room to breathe. I like Reniform Pulse. I don't know that it's the best like closer to the record, maybe in just the way that it sort of just, it's one of those that just kind of ends, I think, yeah, which is a bit of a negative. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say that I'm pretty hot on like the A side of this record as a whole. I feel like this record doesn't have a ton of like standouts. If I was like ranking all of the Odd Tucker tracks, I don't think, you know, many of these would make it, you know, on the real high highs. But just as a whole, like the first half, the first five tracks are quite cool. Like I love Xylan. I love how, you know, IV kind of like, you know, Xylan just totally deconstructed and now it's like, oh, we're just starting deconstructed. Now we're going even farther than that, huh? You know, and then it's like absolutely shocking when 6IE starts off in like total banger mode, like just electro funk banger, dirty, you know, synth jam. It's like, it's weird for the context that it's in, I feel like. And then we go right back to the bizarre with Taper, which I think is like kind of fascinating with just these like big, you know, it's like this gurgling, bubbling thing, but then just these blasts of like almost random seeming chords. And then Syrup Air, I think, is a total monster. You know, we got an email from listener Mike who says, this album might be worth the price of admission if simply for Syrup Air alone. It's a stunning example of the things they can accomplish in a single track and all the transformations they can put a track through. It starts with this low techno Detroit electro style beat and this overhanging synth that almost has a sense of time running out or it's getting late to it. At least that's what I'm feeling when I hear it. I get the feeling that time is wasting away in an ominous way. Things get really intense when the huge jab-like cutting beat takes over and the low techno beat is now sliced off. The synth is taken over by this Confield voice-like sound or something that would fit well on Confield. The beat spatters all over the place and then chaos occurs, yet the track manages to hold onto the drive it had at the beginning and it doesn't dissolve into utter chaos like the other tracks. A great track and probably top 10 Odd Tucker track for me. Also, some trivia. Sean says Syrup Air was two tracks originally. The second half was done before the first, but the first half wasn't done to go with the second. They were just at the same tempo, and it occurred to us once we had both bits that we could put them together. So, anything to add about Syrup Air? Do you think this is like a top 10 type Odd Tucker track?
I don't know if it's top 10, you know, Odd Tucker track, but I think I understand like why people think that. It's definitely a great song. I don't think anything here on Draft is representative of their best work.
Yeah, I mean, I do think Syrup Air is pretty awesome. It's awesome in the sense that it Yeah, it starts off in like, it's weird because if a lot of the tracks have had this kind of hollow wooden feel, all of a sudden Surapair is like very deep and very like, you know, majestic almost, like in its depth and it's like big swelling drones. But it, you know, starts to kind of fall apart. I will add first though that, like, you know, the kind of real world percussion that's going on in there, it kind of starts playing off of this blippy percussion, and it is so inventive and like so fun. It's like it reminds me of Afrobeat or something. Mm-hmm. But then soon after that, you know, it starts to fall apart and, you know, gets really spacious, like really deconstructed, you know, becomes almost like a drum solo kind of a thing, and then all the low end is gone. And it does get a little Confieldy, like the listener mentioned just then. And yet this like kind of high buzzy sound joins in toward the end and just like keeps the momentum going. I just think it's like, it's what a lot of the other tracks are missing, and that something new arrives within the deconstruction that, mm-hmm. like, it's totally transformed, but it's still just propulsive. It's still just moving forward. I mean, you know what I mean? Do you think it's kind of like the accomplishment that some of the other tracks are not?
Exactly. You know, it really, it doesn't just like, while it follows like the, you know, the pattern or whatever of like the deconstruction and all, you're right. Like it brings in new things. It still has like a propulsiveness to it. Whereas a lot of the other tracks, I feel like either fall into like a formulaic sort of thing, or they just kind of fall short in doing that kind of trick. You know, whereas Surapair like really nails it.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of wanted to ask, I meant to ask this on the Confield episode actually, but do you feel like Confield could have used a centerpiece like this? You know, like I found myself wondering, I guess I decided no, but it was like weird to me that Confield had no juggernaut. You know, it's just like every track is almost the same length, give or take. And you know, here we've got a clear centerpiece, everything, you know, I was saying earlier how some tracks, you know, deconstruct, some reconstruct, and I almost feel like Surapair is the turning point of that. It's like, you know, deconstruct, Surapair, reconstruct. And do you think it disrupts the flow, or it's great that it sits right in the middle here?
I think this record needed the sort of centerpiece of Surapair. I think if we didn't have something like that, I think my impressions of it would be more negative. As for your Confield question, I don't think Confield needed it. I like Confield the way it is. It's sort of like, you know, it's a record. It's like a monolithic, like I don't really want to like break any piece of it out, you know, like it's you want to hear the whole thing. Whereas, you know, not to say that Draft isn't, you know, record like, but, you know, Surapair, you know, if I was making a Autechre playlist or something, you know, like you could throw it in there. I feel like Confield is much more of a, you know, monolithic sort of work.
Yeah, I agree. I want to read a quick email from listener AT, who says the melodies are minimal and generally wrapped up in the percussion. Like we were saying, Xylon Room, he says, is a perfect example of what I mean. The kick drum thuds away in this repeating melodic motive. A weird digital melodic synth tone struggles to break through the percussion. The rhythms completely change midway, and this gorgeous synth sound starts to break through from the center channel and out into the stereo field. And listener Jeff wrote to say, the opener Xylon Room is really something, and you can just feel this immense space as the woodblock type beats seem to bounce around in this echoey room. You know, I sort of mentioned the first half being quite cool to me, and I do think like Xylon Room just sets the tone wonderfully. I think it's almost the equal of Surapair for me. But let's move on to the weak points. What do you really dislike here?
You know, there's nothing I like specifically hate, you know, on this record. I just some things just kind of fall flat, you know, like VLAL5. It's one of those tracks like I honestly like struggle to remember which one that is and everything. Yeah. It just like doesn't stick out to me. Taper,
it's the poor man's Zeiss Contra-X.
Yeah, a Taper sort of feels like that. It's not bad. It just sort of has like a interlude-y kind of feel to it, especially being so short. And this record, I feel like, doesn't need an interlude kind of thing. You know, it's not like building that kind of world. It's almost like too short of a record. I mean, I know it's over an hour long, but for Autechre, you know, it's almost too short to waste time on an interlude-y kind of thing like that. So I think Taper and VLA5 are my least favorites here.
Yeah, I kind of just, like, as much as I like the first half, I sort of dislike the second half. I think, like, I love that this centerpiece is here, Sir Appear, and that everything builds up to it, but I almost feel like the album doesn't recover after that. And part of the reason is that you get all these, like, really accessible kind of tracks right afterwards, like, you know, Theme of a Sudden Roundabout, Poor Man's Seafern, VL, Poor Man's Zeiss, you know, like, PN Till is kind of, like, cool and fun. It's got, like, this kind of bass groan that sounds like a slap bass solo or something. I really think of just like this, like bubbling, like bouncing bass groan. V Proc, like novelty ish with the drum kit, as like fun as it was the first couple times I heard it. Even 6-1-E, I like that it just sort of disrupts this really abstract first half, but you know, I don't know, just all the tracks that are bolded on Rate Your Music, I feel like I like the least. We had listener AT say 6-1-E-CR is just great, particularly the second half, where again the bass and other sounds become increasingly melodic. I do like the second half a lot more. But then listener Mike says, I think the weakest track is 6-1-E-CR, as the beat sounds just irk me. The synth that comes in at the end is sweet though, so I do like that part. I think if there were more of that high register synth, I would really like this track. You know, we had listener Jeff say, I don't think I will ever get Taper. And we had a listener, AT, not really criticizing, but mentioned that Reniform Pulse has a completely different sound palette from the rest of the album. It sounds similar to the second and third tracks on Gantz Graph, maybe more of that digital synthesized sound, but much more laid back. I did want to bring that up because I feel like, I don't know, Reniform Pulse seems to be sort of a fan favorite, and I feel like it just falls flat. Is that kind of what you were saying earlier?
I like the song. It's not a good closer. It just kind of ends. It's the kind of thing, you know, especially since it sort of starts with like kind of silence, when it's over, I had to keep thinking like, was that the last song? You know, I feel like on most of the other Ottecker albums, you kind of know, you know, that was the hit. Right. You know, they're real good about that. And I just feel like here it was just sort of like, oh yeah, that's the last one here.
Yeah. I mean, it starts off like very nice, you know, in an accessible way. It's like suddenly very melodic and just open and understandable with like a real deal chord progression going on and stuff. I sort of don't like how Confield-y it sounds because it is so much cleaner and like just less glitchier and buzzier than anything else on the album. And I'm tempted to call it a poor man's Lentic Catachresis because it does the same trick, which is sort of an extra annoying because the last track on Gantz Graph does the same trick. And I was like, I love this two times, but I don't know about three times, you know, where it's just like, it's pretty and lovely. And like, you feel like, am I listening to Boards of Canada or what? And then it starts to like sort of speed up and get more jittery and crazier. But there's something so weird about this track that it just stays really, really low key. And the, you know, like where Lentic, it felt like you're like, you know, hitting hyper speed or something. This is just like, it just turns into bubbling and gurgling, you know, and then just ends with no fanfare whatsoever and fades out for like two straight minutes.
Yeah, exactly. The lack of fanfare, I think, it is my issue.
Yeah. I want to run through some remaining track feedback in case there's anything we haven't talked about yet. Mike says another standout track is PN Till, as it just has this repetitive, infectious groove that like catches you on its hook. And I find myself singing along to this track. AT wrote, PN Till is an amazing hip hop type of track that evolves into this really cool broken jazz thing. VLAL5 always conjures imagery of floating through a giant starship construction yard out in Earth's orbit. Jordan said the clip drums on the second track sound like the equivalent of a drummer hitting drums so hard that the drumsticks break. 6-1-E is what every Ottecker track sounds like to normies. No one ever talks about how good PN Till is. Listener Eric at lonelymachines.org says, as riveting as V-Proc is at first, it doesn't have enough bass material to sustain it past the 4-minute mark. And listener Sean says, Sir Appear and PN Till are sick, but could easily lose the last couple minutes and be way better for it. Any of that bring thoughts to mind?
Not particularly. I mean, I think I agree with, most of what everyone said. Eric, V-Proc, I mean, he's right. It really doesn't, a lot of the songs here, you know, like there's just like not enough to sustain them all, you know?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I feel that way about PN Till in particular. Just like kind of, okay, so we're falling apart again a little bit here at the end. You know, it's just like, I don't know, sort of overdone and just wasn't interesting enough to like make me want to hear it deconstruct. But I also feel like, you know, somebody mentioned the second track and the, you know, drumsticks breaking because you're hitting it so hard. I feel like I haven't showered enough praise on IVVV because I this is one of those tracks where I don't know what the fuck is going on, but I love it.
Yeah.
Like I just, I love it. It's like totally crazy. And when I started this record, I was like, wow, Xylinerome was like a cool island jam and then turned into like total chaos. And now I'm just living in this chaos. I cannot wait for the rest of this fucking album, you know? And then I feel like I got a little touch of it on Taper and Syrup Hair, but then it just was kind of like these bangers that didn't know exactly where to go. So I don't know. It gives me very mixed feelings about it. Eric also wrote, the last record, Confield, felt like a collection of only loosely related pieces, but Draft 730 feels like an actual album again, something with a narrative flow, perhaps a novel to the last record's collection of set pieces. That seems to totally contradict what you were saying earlier about Confield being like an album.
Yeah, I mean, I think of... I understand what he means by like set pieces, you know, like that, you know, that puts it, I think, all in the same world, if I'm, you know, understanding him correctly. But no, I think of Confield like really as like a piece, you know, a monolithic, you know, like record.
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned how like sort of leads you into the chaos and then like quite gently guides you out. I mean, I think like Confield is just so beautifully constructed. This, you could shuffle this for sure, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think so. You know, it really, I mean, I said it earlier, but it's the first like Ateca record where I'm not like, this is obviously the last song. I like the intro, you know, where it is, but it might just be because I'm used to it, you know, starting that way. But yeah, I don't think you would lose a ton if you shuffled this record or anything.
Yeah, actually, it might even be better if you shuffled it because I'm like pretty disappointed by just the string of like immediately accessible bangers at the end there, even though they do get weird as they go on. But it's just like, you know, you see on the on Rate Your Music, like the bolded tracks, they're, you know, kind of all crowded at the end there. And it's just like, I don't know. I thought I was in for like being lost in some digital ruined city / deep, you know, haunted forest or something. And instead I'm like listening to, you know, funk workouts on, you know, over some metallic distortion. I want to spend just a minute on the context before we wrap up here. That Wire cover story I mentioned earlier, it's really, really awesome, like really insightful. I'm going to share it on Twitter for sure, and you got to read it. But it's especially interesting because it talks about how the world of electronica has become overcrowded in 2003 and praises Ateca for pushing into strange new territory in a way that evokes, quote, the days when electronic music was a remote and alien proposition. You know, we talked about how electronic music was sort of reaching its saturation point at the time of Confield and how it was really cool that Ateca just pulled away, you know, at this point. We're even further into that. I took like a quick look at Rate Your Music's charts and was reminded of, you know, some other 2003 albums from like the Postal Service and M83. You know, it just, I don't know. I was like a little too young at this time, but this is like when my musical consciousness was first developing this period. And I remember that it was just cool. It was not controversial. It was just cool if an artist was using electronic elements or entirely electronic elements at this point, you know, talking like pop and indie rock and stuff. So how do you see Draft fitting or not fitting into the musical landscape of 2003?
I think, I mean, even though this is sort of a step back, it's still like, I think in a different world than that, you know, because you're right. You know, this is when, you know, every band has a synth or something in it, right? You know, kind of, you know, everything,
machines and everything.
Yeah. Everything you hear on the radio at least has like some sort of electronic element, if not like being, you know, entirely electronic. But I don't think, you know, like, it's not like Ateca, you know, went pop or something, you know, don't get me wrong with that. I think they're still like completely in their own, you know, territory here with Draft. It's just a step back from the they had built a even further out territory, but I think that, you know, they moved a little closer back, but still far out.
Yeah, I guess, you know, just as I thought about it, I was like, I agree with what The Wire says about the first half of the album. I think that is totally cool because, you know, by 2003, we've lost it. We've lost that feeling of like when you hear Kraftwerk or something, it sounds so alien, you know, like so robotic and so bizarre. That feeling is gone. And there are several tracks in the first half of this record that do give me that same feeling. But then there are tracks toward the end, like I was saying, like V-Proc. It pains me to say this as much as it pains the listeners who are going to write me anger emails, but that could be an M83 song. Why the fuck not? You know, like I can imagine PNTIL on, you know, some electronic, you know, pop artist or something of the time. Like it's just a weird kind of like half, you know, one step forward, one step backward kind of thing going on this record. I wonder if they felt a little lost, maybe even a little uninspired by the world of electronic music around them at this time.
I mean, that's possible. You know, I won't go as far to say that anything here, you know, sounds like M83. You know, send your hate mail.
I like M83 for the record. I really do like M83, but you know,
for the record, I don't. I hate M83.
it's just funny also to think that, like, you know, we've been sort of half jokingly speculating the last couple episodes that like Autechre got in an arms race with Aphex Twin, and they were kind of like pushing each other, you know. And I feel like a lot of the warp artists and stuff of the 90s were like really pushing each other forward over that whole stretch, and it was like really creative and really exciting. And you know, Aphex is like fucking gone at this point. Like he's not gonna make another album until Syro. And and I just, you know, I don't know well enough, but I don't know any like albums by Square Pusher or Music or anything like from this period that are all that exciting. And I don't know, just feels like maybe like a down time for the world of electronic music a little bit. So let's wrap it up here. How did it go with Draft 730 these past 2 weeks? How would you sum up your feelings?
You know, I came into this, you know, not loving this record. I said it, you know, it was always sort of my least favorite Autechre. And I was really like kind of hoping, because I think, you know, I said it with Confield and stuff last time, you know, I came to like really like discover it and was kind of like upset that I, you know, hadn't discovered it, you know, as deeply sooner. And I was really like excited for that to happen this week, and it just did not happen. I feel basically the same about Draft as I did before. It's my least favorite you know LP by the group. It's the first, like, doing this podcast, like, you know, we listening to the same album over and over and over, like sometimes that can get annoying, but to be completely honest, like, it has not thus far. I've readily wanted to listen to all the records we've gotten to. Draft was the first time that it was like I had to kind of force myself sometimes to listen to it. You know, I was wanting to listen to other things, you know, and I would do that, of course. You know, I'm not only listening to Autechre, but, you know, I had to be like, oh, no, come on, you know, you gotta get Draft in there, you know. It was the first time that I felt that way. Like, I gotta listen to Draft, you know. And that just sort of, like, summed up my feelings on the record. Like, it's not bad. It's just, like, I don't want to. It's still that Autechre record that I think I'll only listen to when I'm going through the discography, or, you know, like want to listen to this mid period. I don't see it ever becoming like a record I just put on its own.
Yeah, I mean, I felt differently in that I would have said I like this record just having listened to it, like some, you know, just in the group of the middle period. Yeah, I probably listened to it plenty, but just thrown it on and never like really focused that deeply on it. And you know, but I felt like I never really got it. Like, I was just like, oh, this is cool. Like, these rhythms are fun and awesome. And you know, I like hearing them in the background a lot. And then I started listening these past 2 weeks, and I was like, man, I just don't get this. And I was kind of captivated by it. And then I got it, and then I didn't like it anymore. Like, for some reason. Like, once I got it, I was just like sort of let down in a weird way. You know, I want to talk about our rankings. I feel like very conflicted about this because, like I said, I think the first half of the record is quite distinct, like quite special. And of course, like some of that pops up in the latter half as well. It's striking. It's really awesome for the first like 10 listens or something. And then it starts to lose its luster a little bit. And there's some like serious flaws here, I think. So, you know, in my ranking, I don't know, I put it at number 8. here, right above N-Vein, right below LP5. And I feel like it could drop. You know, like over these past 2 weeks, I didn't listen to Confield once, but I'm feeling like I want to put that up because I just keep thinking about how good it is. And I feel like I'm going to have the opposite experience. Where did Draft end up number-wise for you?
For me, I put it number 11, right above Anvil Vapor and right below In Vain. It's just, like I said, it's definitely my least favorite LP so far. And then I really had to think and stuff, you know, like which EPs is it worse than even? There's a handful of them.
Yeah, it's weird because I just sort of like threw it in my, throw it in my ranking, that initial ranking. And like you mentioned, a lot of times we're listening to stuff and I'm thinking like, is this my favorite Outtaker album? Mm-hmm. So I'll put it like number two or something. And then it'll sort of drop and like land where it will. And I had it higher because I was like loving it at the beginning. And just like, I was like, I'm so lost. This is like so fascinating. And it kept dropping. And yeah, I don't know. It doesn't feel right where I have it at number eight. I feel like it's not as good as EP7, yet I have it above EP7. So I'm going to do some tinkering. But you want to read your top 10 right now?
Yeah, number 10, I got In Vain, Sickly Sweet, Garbage, Incunabula, number 7, EP7 at number 6, Confield, Amber, LP5, Chiastic Slide at number 2, and number 1, Trirepite.
Yeah, I've got number 10, Incunabula, 9, In Vain, Draft 730, LP5, Gantz Graf, Sickly Sweet, Confield, Amber, Chiastic Slide, and number 1, Trirepite. So, any closing thoughts on this chapter of the Outtaker journey? The first weird chapter of the Outtaker journey.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's almost refreshing in the sense that, like, you know, I always kind of fear that this podcast will just become us, like, gushing over Outtaker, and it's the problem in that they're oftentimes very good and too good, maybe, you know. It sounds weird to say it, but it's almost nice to have one that, you know, we're not completely in love with. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't hate it by any means. It's just I'm not in love with it at all.
Yeah, it's possible that I'll throw it on a year from now or something, and I'll be like, damn, forgot how good this is. And then if I spend any more time with it, I might be like, oh, I forgot how not that good it is as well. You know, I just want to say, don't hate us if you're a huge Draft lover. We heard from a lot of you and read a lot of your emails here. If you want to write us for our listener email episode and tell us where we're wrong, I would love that. But yeah, no Outtaker fan loves everything, right?
No, of course not. So, send us your emails, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Next proper episode, like we said, going to be in 3 weeks, Untilted. We want your hot takes, your opinions, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. We'll have a listener email, bonus show, whatever, in, 2 weeks from now?
2 weeks.
I don't even know our own schedule. if you like the show, help us out, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up YouTube, stay connected, Twitter, Instagram, gonkcastpod. And we'll see you next time.
See ya. Happy holidays.